we'll begin with verse 31. I want to do a quick rehash of what is building up to this. Ben-Hadad came, and he said that he was going to take all of Israel's wives and their children and their gold and their silver, and anyway, and then after that, well, I want even more. I'm going to take anything that you hold precious. And so the elders and the people told Ahab, no, don't do that. And so anyway, Ben-Hadad said, well, verse 10, and Ben-Hadad said unto him and said, the God do so unto me and more also, if the dust of Samaria shall suffice for a handful for all the people that follow me. In other words, there was only going to be dust left of the city. But that's not what the Lord had planned. Anyway, in verse 13, and behold, there came a prophet unto Ahab, king of Israel, saying, thus saith the Lord, hast thou seen all this great multitude, you know, the army about you, you know, the ones that are going to try to take all that you love, everything away from you? Behold, I will deliver it into thine hand this day. So, Ahab, whether he knew it or not, whether he believed it or not, had the victory before the battle even started. But there was a reason for that. And that's part of verse 13. And thou shalt know that I am the Lord. Okay, so this was a battle that took place in the hills. Now, hillside fighting kind of tends to favor smaller bands. And that's basically what Ben-Hadad's people told him. They said, well, our gods are the gods of the plain, you know, so let's fight them out there. And our gods will take over. And but so what happened in the second battle? Verse 28, and there came a man of God and spake unto the king of Israel and said, thus saith the Lord, because the Syrians have said, the Lord is God of the hills, but he is not God of the valleys, therefore will I deliver all this great multitude into thine hand. So, again, God has given him the victory before the battle has even started. And as we studied last week, they didn't lose a single man. But Ben-Hadad lost thousands and thousands. I think even more than most people think in the first battle. And definitely more in the second battle. Anyway, and the reason for that, in the last part of verse 28, and ye shall know that I am the Lord. Now here was two great battles where they were greatly outnumbered. Well, they slew in the second battle. They had Ben-Hadad supposedly had the same number of people in the second battle, just like Ahab had. Ahab had 7,232 people. Now that's not much of an army. Especially back in these days when most of the fighting was hand to hand. But, anyway, Ben-Hadad had, thousands and thousands. During the battle, over 100,000 were killed. And so they fled, verse 30, but the rest fled to Aphek into the city, and there were, and there a wall fell upon 27,000 of the men that were left. So they couldn't get away from the Lord even hiding in the city. You can't hide from the Lord. If he is after you, he has you. He is everywhere. He is all powerful. You can't defeat him. And we have people nowadays that It scares me to be around them sometimes, because, you know, you look for fire to come down from heaven and take care of them. But God is not willing that any should perish, so he withholds his judgment. There's going to be a time coming, though. God is a just God, and there is going to be punishment, so they're going to pay for these things. Anyway, the last part of verse 30, and Ben-Hadad fled and came into the city, into an inner chamber. In other words, he was in a building, and in a chamber, and in an inner chamber. So basically, he was hiding in a closet. Now, I have been scared when I was little. There used to be a TV show on Saturday mornings where this little kid's name was Haji or something like that, and there was always either a tiger going to get him or a snake. And I would go around and hide behind the sofa till the music changed, and I knew he was safe again, because I was scared to death that he was going to get eaten by the tiger or bit by the snake. So, you can't hide from the Lord. Anyway, verse 31, beginning of today's study, and his servants said unto him, behold now, we have heard that the kings of the house of Israel are merciful kings. This I pray thee, put sackcloth on our loins and ropes upon our heads, and go out to the king of Israel. Peradventure he will save thy life. So we've lost. I mean, they lost big time. And so his servants, those close to Ben-Hadad, they told him, you know, we've heard that the kings of Israel are merciful. And if we put sackcloth on us and a rope around our neck, now, that's what this means. It said rope on our head, but it means it was a rope around our neck. In other words, we're defeated. Do with us what you will. Maybe he will spare your life then. And so it was a good idea in their eyes. And so they girded sackcloth on their loins and put ropes on their heads and came to the king of Israel and said, now, Ben-Hadad didn't go out at first here. He let the servants go out. Thy servant, he's the one that was going to steal the wives and the children and the silver and the gold. Now he's thy servant. Ben-Hadad saith, I pray thee, let me live. And he said, this is Ahab, he said, is he yet alive? He didn't know whether he'd even survived the battle. And then he goes on to put his foot in his mouth big time. He says, he is my brother. Now, we have in many instances in history, people have been defeated and in battles and stuff like that. And instead of things being done that should have been done to rectify the situation, people have gone on to rebuild the enemy's house and stuff like that. Now, I'm not saying that in all cases that that's wrong, but we do know in this case it was wrong, because God said that he gave the victory to Israel because he wanted them to know that he's God. He's the God of the hill. He's the God of the valley. He's the God of the plain, God of the river, God of the ocean. He's God everywhere. God of the sky. He is just God. There is none other. Anyway, he is my brother. We have kinship. There was no kinship here. Verse 33, now the men did diligently, this is the servants of Ben-Hadad, did diligently observe whether anything would come from him, or if they were going to get a signal or some kind of a sign what Ahab was going to do. And they did, and did hastily catch it. They said, you know, they noticed, you know, he is my brother. Oh, okay, you know, he's my brother. And they said, thy brother Ben-Hadad. So in other words, they reinforced that statement. It was a false statement. And they noticed that you got to watch what you say. Words have meanings. And they cause things to happen. And because of Ahab's little statement here, he is my brother, they turned it right back around to him and he said, thy brother Ben-Hadad. Then he said, go ye bring him. In other words, bring Ben-Hadad to me. Then Ben-Hadad came forth to him, and finally he come out of his hole. And he caused him to come up into the chariot. He brought him right up into the chariot with him. Now, I don't know if this was an actual chariot or just some kind of wagon or like a coach or something like that. But it says chariot, so we're going to go with chariot. And Ben-Hadad said unto him, the cities which my father took from thy father I will restore. Well, they could have took them back anyway. They had already defeated his army. I mean, completely. And he said, okay, I'll give you back what's rightfully yours anyway. And thou shalt make streets for thee in Damascus, as my father made in Samaria. In other words, you know, we're going to, you know, going to have a Ahab street or whatever kind of street you want. Then said Ahab, I will send thee away with this covenant. He just got done fighting a major battle here, and well over 100,000 men were killed. And he said, yeah, we're gonna have a covenant now. And he was going to make a covenant with a guy that said he was going to take his wives, his children, his silver, and his gold, plus everything precious to him. So he made a covenant with him and sent him away. Now, the rest of the study today is going to be about the repercussions. What happens when you don't do what God tells you to do? So, verse 35, and a certain man of the sons of the prophets said unto his neighbor, unto his neighbor, in the word of the Lord, smite me, I pray thee. And the man refused to smite him. Now we're getting a little bit of what happens when you don't follow the Lord's word here. Then said he unto him, because thou hast not obeyed the voice of the Lord, behold, as soon as thou art departed from me, a lion shall slay thee. And as soon as he was departed from him, a lion found him and slew him. So in other words, this prophet told the man to hit me. And he said, I'm not going to do that. And I don't know what his particular reason was, whether he feared hitting the prophet or whether maybe they had been friends or they just wasn't mad or what the reason was, but it was the word of the Lord. The prophet told him, you know, you need to hit me. And he wouldn't do it. When God tells you to do something, you do it. He'll make you able to do it. If you follow his word at all, I once knew a pastor, he was in Tennessee, and I can't remember his name, and I probably already told this dozens of times, but the Lord called him to be a missionary in a certain place. And he had a good job, and he had a good house and a new car, and he said, well, Lord, I can't go. And we know somebody was in a similar situation and a little church called him, and he came. So we got to be careful. We got to be careful. When God tells you to go, you go. Anyway, he lost his job, repossessed the house and the car, and he said, okay, Lord, I'll go. So you're going to go anyway. It's easier when you do it the first time. So anyway, so what happens? In verse 37, and he found another man and said, smite me, I pray thee. I don't know whether this second guy saw what happened to the first guy or not. Maybe he didn't know anything about it. I kind of choose to believe that he did, because he didn't have any trouble smiting the prophet. And the man smote him so that in smiting he wounded him. In other words, he broke the skin. He drew blood. There was some kind of wound there that was visible. And it doesn't say anything else about that particular thing. It goes on and says, so the prophet departed and waited for the king by the way and disguised himself with ashes upon his face. So he apparently was known. It doesn't say who the prophet was, but apparently he was known by Ahab because he disguised himself. And he waited on the king, and verse 39, as the king passed by, he cried unto the king, and he said, thy servant went out into the midst of the battle. In other words, I was in the battle, and I went out, and behold, a man turned aside, and he brought a man unto me, and said, keep this man, if by any means he be missing, then shall thy life be for his life, or else thou shalt pay a talent of silver. In other words, you watch this guy. You don't let him get away. And if he does get away, whatever the reason, you're going to pay your life for his life, or you're going to have to pay a talent of silver. Now, a talent of silver was a goodly sum. And it's even more goodly nowadays. But anyway, he says all this to the king. Now, did this actually happen? No, it didn't. Prophets use things like this. You remember David, when Nathan went to him and told him of the man that killed his neighbor's one sheep, one lamb, and he told him, you are the man. God uses people. And this story he's telling him here, verse 40, and as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone. In other words, I was doing this and I was doing that in the battle. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to be watching this guy, make sure he didn't get away. So it was obvious what the penalty was going to be. And the king of Israel said unto him, so shall thy judgment be, thyself hast decided it. So, in other words, you're going to pay with your life, or you're going to come up and pay with the talent of silver. And back then, you paid the money, or you did lose your life. So, the prophet had made his point. Ahab had made the judgment. The only judgment he could make. So, verse 41, and he hastened, that's the prophet hastened, and took the ashes away from his face, and the king of Israel discerned him, or he recognized him, that he was of the prophets. So he recognized him. He knew he was a man of God. So what happens then? And kind of wonder what this is all about. What's happening here? In verse 42, and he said unto him, the prophet said to Ahab, thus saith the Lord. Now, many times we kind of come up with things in our own mind. We want to make our own decision, be our own man or be our own woman, whichever, stuff like that. But we need to understand, if we're God's children, we don't have to come up with a lot of these decisions and stuff like that. All we got to do is remember, thus saith the Lord. The Bible will help you at just about any decision. Now, there are some things nowadays that, you know, it's kind of hard to connect the dots. But if you just consider, you know, well, you know, would I be comfortable with Jesus sitting right beside me doing what I'm doing now? And if that answer is no, then you ought not be doing it. But thus saith the Lord, because thou hast let go out of thy hand a man whom I appointed to utter destruction, therefore thy life shall go for his life, and thy people for his people. In other words, you're going to lose your life because of this. And your people are going to go for his people, because, you know, he sent the rest of them away, sent them away. And they